This is Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on 760 WJR. Your bird's eye view on Michigan's business and entertainment scene. Here's Jeff.
All right, welcome to Let's Go Michigan, a show that we do every Saturday afternoon right here on WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes at 1 p.m. And Kristen Kajawa, Mark Pastoria, you're here with me, of course. Glad to have you. Glad to have all of you tuning in. A couple of things we want to cover. In our first segment that we do on the show, we always try to bring news and information relevant and interesting to the Michigan community. And certainly one of those things that's happening that we all need to be aware of is the fact that we change our clocks tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Daylight savings time, weekend. Everyone's going to be ornery Monday when we come in, lose an hour of sleep. Ugh.
Well, don't we get an hour extra of sun at the end of the day?
Well, we do. See, silver lining. There's Kristen looking at the silver lining. That is exactly the idea. We get that extra hour of sun at the end of the day. Now, there is something real now. There are many experts that have made clear through studies and research and other things that, in fact, this little one-hour time change that happens, of course, tonight, technically Sunday morning at 2 a.m., but nonetheless happens tonight. You're going to wake up, and instead of your clock saying 7 a.m., it's going to say 8 a.m., and assuming you change it. So when you wake up in the morning, you're on the right time. Now, as I say, research has shown, and this is interesting, guys, that this daylight savings time thing, it's controversial because there are real health effects as a result of it. Cardiac arrests go up. Car accidents actually go up because of that lack of sleep that begins to really, many say it's worse on a Monday morning after the first night being Saturday night, Sunday morning, however you want to say it. The Monday morning is really tough to get up for work because you're getting one last hour of sleep effectively.
Can't we shut the show down? Can't we turn off daylight savings time?
Okay, so there's something in the works that is suggesting and likely could be, this might be the last year if we can get legislation passed here in the state of Michigan. Other states have passed it, banning future daylight savings time adherence. And so what many are recommending is that we actually spring forward and stay on the daylight savings time as opposed to the standard time and just not have a change anymore. So we get that benefit of that extra hour of sunlight at the end of the day always. Of course, it's darker in the morning.
Well, that's fine.
That's fine, yeah.
Do we care? I don't know.
And we're just grumpy in the morning anyway, so what difference does it make? No sunlight's going to help. All right. That being the case, good reminder for everybody to make sure the kids get to the bus on time Monday morning and you get to work on time, whatever it may be. In other news, here's something about the state of Michigan we wanted to make clear. We always love calling out things that are positive about our state, of course. 5 Michigan school districts have now been recognized as among 250 what's known as most envied mean school districts that are based on a survey of 3,000 parents who were asked about the learning environment they'd most like for their children if given a choice. And before I go to the 5 in the state of Michigan, I'm going to do this. Here's the top 5 in the country. At number 5, the Carrboro City Schools in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Number 4, Eanes Independent School District in Texas. Number 3, Jericho Union Free School District in New York. Great Neck, New York at number 2. New York comes in with a couple of 2 and 3 nationally. And then in Pennsylvania, the Lower Merion School District comes in at number 1 nationally, most envied. So how'd the state of Michigan do? Well, here's where we landed on the national list. We had, again, 5 school districts making it into that list of most envied schools in the United States. And at number 121, Okemos Public Schools. Number 79, Novi Community District. Number 19, Ann Arbor Public Schools. At number 18, East Grand Rapids. And the highest placing Michigan school district was the Bloomfield Hills School District, coming in at number 15 nationally. So there we go. So we
That's
had five
really
districts
cool.
make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got that going on. How about this one? This is interesting. Kristen, a lot of things happening in and around the state of Michigan. You've got some highlights for us.
I do. Yeah, this weekend is busy. And here in the city of Detroit, today, actually, right after our show from 2 to 4 at Aretha's Jazz Cafe. I thought you might like this, Mark. There's a Rising Star Jazz Horn competition that's going on. And the first place winner will perform with the All-Star Band at the Michigan Jazz Fest, July 21st.
Very cool.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool. You should go, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Mark had a relationship with Aretha, engineering and producing for her. That must have been an incredible thing to be associated with her and to be part of that, the making of that music. Wow, what an incredible thing. Yeah, amazing. All right, so that's a cool thing to be doing this weekend.
Yeah, we'll get this show done fast and you can
scurry
over.
There might even be a Mark Pastoria sighting
at the
event.
Yeah. And then I think what everybody in the Detroit area is looking forward to Sunday from 1 to 4 is the 66th annual St. Patty's Day Parade in Corktown.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, right? So it's fun for the family. I just read this. I don't even believe this. It usually draws between 80 to 100,000 people.
There's going to be a lot of sleepy people there because of the daylight savings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Change, but nonetheless, nothing like a little parade to perk you up.
I mean, there's bands
Patty's.
And floats right. and
what could possibly go
ballyhoo
wrong on
and
St.
tomfoolery, all kinds of shenanigans happening. I have a fun fact for you. Did you know this? Corktown is Detroit's oldest neighborhood. Did you know that?
It's a cool
neighborhood. I love Corktown.
Corktown's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I love Corktown. And also on Sunday at 5:30 at the Music Hall, our friend Jay Towers from Fox 2, he is actually going to be interviewing Priscilla Presley.
Really?
Yeah, he's doing a one-on-one interview with her. It's open to the public about her life, and she will share some stories and do a little Q&A. That's cool.
Love it. That is cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so something for everyone. There we go, covering it all. Listen, coming up later on our show, speaking of something for everyone, got a couple of interesting subject matters we'll be covering. One is, we all at times struggle with having to do small talk. Either because we're in front of someone we don't really want to be having any kind of talk with, let alone small talk.
Kind of like right now?
We love Mark. What are you trying to tell me and Kristen here?
What?
Yes. Yes, Mark is stuck with us, Kristen. But nonetheless, how to be better at small talk.
I'm excited.
Coming up on our show, we're going to hear about that. Cool interview, good tips on that. And we all could use a little refresher there. And then we're also going to cover a story, it's kind of unfortunate, this winter that's gone AWOL on us here in the state of Michigan, the missing winter, the winter that, at least so far into early March, hasn't really happened like we're used to anyway. How is that impacting small business owners in the Upper Peninsula across the northern part of Michigan, all of Michigan, frankly? The fact that there's no snow, it's not cold enough, winter activities really curtailed, impacting the entire industry of those who provide activities, whether it's skiing or snowmobiling or ice fishing, and then those who serve those communities of people, the hotels, the restaurants, et cetera, all suffering in this year, the year without a winter, at least not for them, that no snow in the Upper Peninsula. All right, before we go to a break, I want to do one thing. I want to give a shout out to a guy that stopped in our office this past week, new friend of ours, loves the show, listens to it every Saturday, that being Jonathan Rosenthal. Jonathan, we appreciate you tuning in. And by the way, Jonathan's got a star football player. His kid, Bennett, plays for the Birmingham Patriots and lights it up. Thanks a lot, Jonathan, for coming by. Appreciate you. One of the things when we say, let's go Michigan in the winter is let's go snowmobiling. Let's go up north. Let's go enjoy winter sports. Let's go skiing. Let's go ice fishing. All the things that make a great winter for those of us who love winter activities, outdoor activities in the winter. We're kind of missing it. Where is it? Where's the winter?
Jack Frost missed us.
It's really unbelievable. Well, I got to tell you, not only does it decay quality of life for those of us who live here and love to, as I say, partake in winter sports, it's also having a huge impact on businesses here in the state of Michigan that depend on a typical Michigan winter, or at least some facsimile of it. Something close to a typical winter would be great. There's no continuity, and it's hard for people to plan vacations, to go up north skiing. Do you spend all that money? Do you commit to go and then go up there and there's no snow? And it's a big problem. Well, to tell us all about it, we've got Rose White, economic reporter for MLive.com, who's just published a story in MLive. A ghost town, Upper Peninsula tourism reckons with warm winter. How are businesses dealing with it? How is it impacting them? Rose, you're here to tell us, give us the high level on this story.
Yeah, it's definitely no secret that this winter has been unusually warm. I think we've seen some 70-degree days in February and just on track to be the warmest winter on record. And so I've been speaking to people in the Upper Peninsula where this is big snow country. A lot of their winter tourism hinges on having a really thick blanket of snow to draw people up there. So some of these businesses, a lot of their small businesses, they have had almost no winter season. So they've barely been able to keep their business operating this winter just because there has not been enough snow or cold enough temperatures to do any of the things that they need to do to keep their businesses operating.
So this affects not only the snowmobile companies and places and the ski resorts, but it also then trickles down to the restaurants, the hotels, the vacation rentals, transportation. It's just bigger than oh, the ski resort didn't make very much money. It's much bigger than that, right?
Exactly. Yep. What we see is, you know, snow draws people to the region. And so they might be heading to go snowmobile for the weekend. But in order to do that, they have to stay at a resort. They're going to be eating at local restaurants. So while snow, you know, is one part of the economy, it has this impact and this ripple effect on all these other businesses that rely on some of those winter tourists to come to the region and spend money there. And so tourism for the Upper Peninsula is a very big industry. It employs about 16.5% of the workforce. And it brings in about $1.5 billion. In visitor spending each year. And, you know, although summer is the peak season, we see a lot of people going to some of those high traffic destinations in the Upper Peninsula. Winter is a very important season for the Upper Peninsula because it tides these businesses over between those shoulder seasons where they don't see as many people come up. And we're also seeing big events that also draw people to the region being canceled. So a lot of the sled dog races were unable to be held this year. And the events that have been held, like the Winter Carnival or Jibba Jabba, and they just had to kind of pivot and operate a little bit differently.
And so you raise two really relevant and important questions in your article, and you answer them. And that is, first, why is it so warm? What's going on here? What's driving the change? Do we know?
Yeah, this year is particularly acutely warm because of the El Nino. So we had a really strong El Nino sort of in the fall and throughout the winter. And so this weather pattern can just interrupt the Arctic jet streams that usually bring cold air down to Michigan throughout the winter. But in addition to that, which this is sort of a one-off with the El Nino, temperatures across the board are just getting warmer. So climatologists have recorded that it's 2 degrees warmer in the Midwest than it was 75 years ago. And we're on track to see temperatures rise by another 6 to 11 degrees in the next 75 years. And although those sound like small numbers, I think what really worries climatologists is the minimum temperatures are rising. So what we see at night and those types of things where that's when we're getting freezes and that type of stuff, those temperatures are the ones that are really pushing the averages up.
Yeah. And I mean, beyond tourism, even, you know, when you see temperatures going up that high, Kristen, we recently did an interview about the fact that even other agriculture here in the state, fruit trees and other things that depend on a season in which I think they call it hardening. You know, there needs to be a certain number of hours below freezing in order to have the trees blossom, you know, in the right timing and in the right way in the spring in order to ultimately produce fruit. All kinds of issues being created by the lack of cold temperatures and by the lack of what we've come to know as a winter here. What can be done? You ask the question in your article, you answer it. We'd love to know, is there anything that can be done? And if so, what?
Yeah, we are seeing human-driven climate change, and so that's a very big question to kind of ask how we can pivot and change that kind of thing. But in the meantime, and sort of in the short term, what some of these businesses are asking for is some support from the state. So in the Western Upper Peninsula, just in two counties, they estimate that they've lost close to $6 million, $7 million just in December and January from lost operating revenue. So they're asking for support from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. And just on Monday, Governor Gretchen Whitmer appointed loans from the Small Business Administration. So those counties are currently considered to be within a drought. And because of that, they can ask for some emergency disaster assistance from the federal government.
Right.
So these are sort of some short-term solutions to help these businesses through this very bizarre winter. Kind of what climatologists are expecting as we're moving forward is we'll see some extreme fluctuations. So while it's very warm this winter, we might see another winter in the next couple of years where there's a big dumping of snow. And in the Upper Peninsula, where they're used to sort of getting a winter with just steady inches after inches, now they're seeing just kind of getting a big dump of snow 1 week, and then it'll warm up and then get another big dump of snow. So I think a lot of the businesses now are trying to figure out how to pivot and diversify what they're doing. So some ski resorts are adding in spas and saunas and other types of attractions to draw people to their resort instead of just relying on the snow.
Yeah, Kristen, I know you love skiing. Your family mm-hmm. loves to ski. You guys go up north. Did you go as much this year?
No, we didn't.
And we didn't either.
We didn't either.
There were a couple of opportunities for us to go run up for a quick weekend to ski. We didn't go. How about you, Rose? Are you a winter sports, winter enthusiast?
Not a ton of winter sports. I'm not a big skier. Maybe more on the ice skating side of things. But, you know, even on that note, a study just came out last week from the University of Waterloo that the U.S. ski industry has lost more than $5 billion over the past two decades just due to climate change. So we are seeing some really steep economic impacts from sort of these warming temperatures.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you, we were going to take some time over the Christmas, New Year's break from school for the kids and go up north. We decided not to go. We then went up at some point in January. It was when we did have a good snow here in Michigan. That was great. But in asking everyone who was, this happened to be the Highlands, and asking everyone there, how's the season going? You know, there's kind of this up and down, like you mentioned, Rose, that you get some snow and then you don't get snow. You get warming. The snow melts. You got to make snow if you can. And they said about the Christmas, New Year's period of time, which is so important for them, they literally called it disastrous. They said there was just dirt. It's just unbelievable. The change.
Yeah, and a lot of ski hills are already closing up for the season, which some of these ski hills in the Upper Peninsula region usually stay open through April, sometimes even May, just because they have enough snow. But they're already closing their doors, and it's the first week of March.
Yeah, I know a lot of resorts depend on golf in the warmer season and skiing in the winter. Golf's going to become more important.
Right.
I mean, it really is. They even had, interestingly enough, because there was dirt, they had winter golf as a little kind of a novelty.
That's fun.
That you could play on a little course up there, a scaled down version of the course. But it was grass and dirt.
Right. Well, I think it's so important that all of these winter destinations, like you said, Rose, really do start to diversify and open themselves up to a variety of other activities. Because if you can't rely on just ice fishing anymore, you're going to have to come up with another activity, or just skiing or snowmobiling. I mean, a lot of these places are really going to have to dig deep to be attractive for other things.
Yeah, and I think for some of these businesses, not only is that a challenge, but it's also a little bit of an identity crisis for regions in the Upper Peninsula that are known for their snowfall.
Really true. Listen, Rose White, economic reporter for MLive.com, you do such a great job always when we have you on the show. We appreciate it very much. Great coverage of the story. The story itself, not so great for the state of Michigan and those that take advantage of the winter in order to make their businesses go. Rose, we appreciate it. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Okay. Kristen, you know, I asked you, have you guys gone up north as much this year to go skiing? You said you haven't. I haven't. Yeah. Our family hasn't. There's two data points right there. A couple of people who love and a couple of families who love outdoor sports.
We just haven't.
Yeah.
And you know what I was actually thinking about in our conversation with Rose? We didn't even touch on the seasonal employees that this affects.
Oh, sure. And the state economy.
Yeah.
I
mean, my family's out because we didn't get to go skiing. Okay. Well, big deal. But those seasonal employees that rely on working through the
where they get
the
their
winter,
paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been let go, or just their hours have been decreased because nobody needs them. So this is a big deal.
It is a big deal. In our little survey of three, we haven't spoken to Mark Pastoria yet. We got to get him in on this. I have a feeling that Mark's not going to be all that sad about not having.
I'm sad for, like Kristen said, employees, people trying to keep their jobs and work.
That's a big deal. Mark, are you a golfer?
I'm a golfer.
You know, we always talk about silver lining and things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In this case, Mark Pastoria is going to get more holes of golf, more rounds of golf in this year than
if
in past years.
Rain.
That's true.
Well, like Kristen said, you know, they have to adapt. They have to find other things to do. We had a golf course, and it was tough because when it rained, you don't get those days back.
Yeah, you have to diversify.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it. Maybe 2024, 2025 year will bring us at least some Michigan winter. All right. Well, we're going to run to a break. But when we come back, Kristen, you did an interview. Very interesting. Something that, you know, if you can't go up north skiing, you can't find things to do in the winter that you typically find to do. Maybe you need to socialize a little more. Get out and socialize. Well, the issue there is that many of us have challenges, and the pandemic may have even heightened it, conducting small talk when it comes to getting into social gatherings, whether it be a little party, heading over to the neighbors, even at work, wherever you interact with people. There's kind of a thing that happens, a dance, if you will, that goes on when you greet people you do know or people you've never met before, whatever it may be. And that's small talk. Some of us better at it than others. Some of us more comfortable with it, more natural at it. Some of us really challenged by it. And even more so, as I said, because of the pandemic.
We're going to give everybody some tips on how to get yourself in the right mindset to go into a conversation, some things to ask, and then how to politely excuse yourself when you are done.
Yeah, well, okay. No small talk here on this show. Kristen, we covered this issue of really being good and comfortable at conducting small talk. I have to ask you a question. Do you feel you're good at it?
No. I mean, I'm okay. I'm average at best. I get a lot of practice because we do it at the office a lot when we have guests in.
How do we define small talk? I was just thinking about that because small talk, I think, is where it kind of happens at the beginning of a conversation with someone. Maybe you don't know the person that well. You're not ready to go deep yet, but you want to get the ball rolling.
Right.
You know, you're stuck. You're at a little party, whatever it may be. Got a beverage in your hand. Oh, there's so-and-so. I got to say something.
Right.
I got to say something. I got to get the ball rolling here, or I've got to respond.
Right. There's small little touch points. It's kind of a way to greet each other and then start with a question about maybe where you are or who you happen to be surrounded with. So it's just like a quick little fast
And it's hitting. Kind of a funny thing, but, you know, like things like the weather. You know,
the weather is,
yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always a good one to grab to get the ball rolling. Or how are the kids?
That's right.
That you know, right. Well, we're going to get some tips. As you said, you're going to bring us an interview that I'm going to be listening to intently. We're eager to hear how to be better at small talk.
Yeah. Allie Volpe is a senior reporter at Vox. Allie, welcome to the show. So mastering the art of small talk. And actually, I found your article going through some newsletters in my inbox, and I stopped and I tagged it because I thought, wait a minute, I have a couple of events coming up. And like most people, small talk is a little cringy and a little stressful. And I'm hoping that you might be able to give us some tips and some ways that we can ease ourselves into what's really not that big of a deal. But I think we work ourselves up into making it a bigger deal than what it is.
Totally. I think small talk is having a bit of a PR crisis. I think people just automatically assume it's going to be terrible or awkward or just like not interesting. And people just don't want to do it. But if you think about conversation in general, very rarely are we sort of just jumping into a very deep conversation, especially with people we don't know. Like, you're not going to walk up to somebody and be like, tell me the worst thing you've ever done, which I have done that before.
Oh, geez.
And it doesn't go well.
Right.
So we need small talk.
Absolutely. And I think I don't like to always go back to, oh, the pandemic, you know, we're different now. But it's kind of true. I mean, because a lot of people have remained working from home, that idea of small talk and having those even workplace interactions feel more strained. We're out of the practice of it. We're slowly tiptoeing back into going to events and having to talk to people face to face. So it is like we're starting over on learning how to be able to walk up to somebody and strike up a conversation.
You're totally right. It is a muscle that we've sort of not worked out in a bit. And if you still are immunocompromised, you are probably a person who can't really get out into the world that much anyway because the pandemic is still ongoing. So I think it's important to remember that we can get better, just as, you know, we maybe got a little rusty. We can get better, but it will take some practice.
And so give us some tips on how do we start? How do we walk up to somebody either at an event or at the grocery store or even at the office? What are some good ways to start small talk?
Right. I think it starts with your mindset of just being open to talking to people, that this isn't going to be an annoying thing. This isn't going to waste your time. Research shows that talking to strangers is beneficial. It makes us happier, it makes both people happier, and both parties often underestimate how much the other person will like us. And we often like these people just fine. So we don't need to feel stressed that this person is going to think we're weird, that we're a mean person. So get those thoughts out of your head. We have to go into it with a good mindset that like this will be a pleasant experience. And in the age of this loneliness epidemic that we are facing, that just talking to a couple of strangers can really monumentally impact our well-being. And so we're doing this really to help ourselves, to help other people, to form stronger ties within our community. So I think if we see all of these conversations as an opportunity and not something that is a filler conversation, it will, you know, change our mindset.
I love that. That's a good start, a good place to jump off from. And I know a lot of people say, oh, well, just open up with how's the weather? Or what do you do? Are those good first questions to ask people? Are there better ones that we could start with?
Right. Like, they're not terrible. I did talk to somebody who loves talking about the weather, and that is very fruitful for him because it is a very common thing. Like, if you're talking to somebody in your neighborhood, you are both experiencing this thing. And so that makes it an easy jumping off point. The idea of commonality is what researchers have shown actually helps these conversations go well. A study found that if you comment on an item of somebody's clothing that, you know, you have some sort of relation to, say they're wearing your favorite band's t-shirt, that's a great opening line to be like, I also love that band. I saw them play in this venue. And those conversations tend to go better than just talking about the weather. But I think whatever you're comfortable leading off with, it needs to be context dependent. Again, one expert I talked to said, if you, you know, got on a plane and asked the person sitting next to you, like, if you had any superpower, what would it be? That person might think, oh, that's a little strange.
Yeah, that person's dreading sitting next to you for the next 4 hours of the airplane ride.
Exactly. So there are ways to keep it interesting, but still like context appropriate. Asking like, are you coming or going? Not to insinuate that you want to know where they live, but right. Like, you know, polite conversation.
Mm-hmm. I like picking out something immediately, like the band t-shirt, or if they have a sport sweatshirt on, things that you can latch onto quickly, I think are great, including the weather. And I think the whole point of small talk, correct me if I'm wrong, is to really be authentic and to genuinely ask questions, because you are seeking information and not just asking one question and then turning it around to, here, let me tell you all about myself.
Yeah, you want to listen to this other person, because so often we get in our heads and we're worried about, okay, what's the next thing I'm going to say? I don't want this person to think I'm weird or awkward, which is totally normal. But I think if we just get that pressure off of ourselves and actually listen to what that person is saying, like if we're on the plane and they're mentioning, oh, I live in London and I'm going back there, that gives you so many opportunities to ask follow-up questions of like, what do you like about London? What did you like about your trip here? Oh, I've been to London. You can bring your own experience into it, but it's just paying attention and picking up on what people are talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And now the second part of this, how do you back out of a conversation? How do you wrap it up? Because sometimes the other person is not reciprocating and it just kind of comes to an end. How do you politely step away?
Right. In some contexts, it's very easy. Like if you're at the grocery store and you're talking with the cashier, there's a very clear end point to that conversation. When I am all done and you have checked me out, that is the end of that. If you see someone in line at a coffee shop, again, that is a very easy conversation. They get their coffee, they're gone, we're done. But at a party, it's a little bit more difficult. And I actually did get a couple emails from people who did not love the suggestion of, you know, politely excusing yourself, saying, hey, I need to run to the bathroom.
Okay, that's what I usually do, which is so embarrassing now because I read that in your article and I was like, wait, that's my line. That's what I do.
I think it's fine if you genuinely go to the bathroom, even if you don't need to go. Right. I think it's okay to excuse yourself. But of course, it is harder in those sorts of party or group settings. But we need to remind ourselves, if both people are not enjoying this, why would we continue? If I am just peppering you with questions and you're giving me one-word answers, it's clear this isn't going anywhere. So you can just like thank the person for their time and politely excuse yourself. Thanks for chatting. I'm going to go get a drink. And if someone is unfortunately, you know, if it takes a turn for the worse and, you know, it's not a productive conversation anymore, you can just say like, this conversation isn't working for me anymore, or this conversation is making me uncomfortable. And again, excuse yourself.
I feel like that's safe and easy to do. And these are all really good tips. And I think you're right. We need to take the pressure off of it. The other person might be feeling just as awkward and uncomfortable. And so you're kind of in the same boat together making small talk because not many people are really good at it. So I would think the majority of people are feeling awkward or uncomfortable. I think that's the right mindset, just to go in open-minded.
Right. You never know what you're going to learn about somebody. And that's what I find so fun is sort of like, oh, I really like your shirt. I had said this to a person at a concert before and they were like, oh, thank you. It's from Macy's and it was my mom's or something like that. But like you find out a really interesting thing. And so now I'm like, okay, do you typically share clothes with your mom? When did she buy it? It opens the door for so many interesting conversations.
It sure does, Allie. Thanks so much. Really good tips. I'm actually going to utilize them. I have a few events coming up in the next 2 weeks, so I'm going to put these to the test. All right, Allie Volpe from Vox, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
All right. Well, I learned something. You know, I have a confession to make.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yes. I love it.
Hold on. I got to go to the bathroom.
Don't get too excited. I'm not always comfortable at small talk. A lot of people think that I'm good at talking to people and everything. And I think maybe generally on the scale, maybe I am a bit. But frankly, there are situations where I'm a little not on my game, maybe not entirely comfortable. What do I say?
Right. I think sometimes when we're distracted, we have a hard time making that connection and also coming up with follow-up questions. We're trying to understand that other person or get to know something about that person or about that person's situation. We are trying to be authentic. We're trying to be, you know, empathetic and interested.
Interesting, right. Mm-hmm. Interested. That's a very good way to say it. I was going to say we're trying to be interesting to engage whoever we're talking to, but you're absolutely right. You also have to be, or at least appear to be, genuinely interested.
Right. And I feel like sometimes we're just distracted. Right. And so we're just asking questions just to ask questions.
And I think another interesting thing in the interview is where you did talk about how do you end it. You talked about what technique you use.
Now everybody's going to know.
There's a lot of times I'll be standing there talking to someone. Yes, well, in the rain today, watered my flowers. and I watched them this afternoon. Then the sun came. I'm like, oh my God, how do I get out of here? Right. How do you end it gracefully? And that's always a challenge. But
and now everybody's going to know my exit plan is to just
we know when you say to me, I'm going to be offended now when I'm standing there talking to you and say, I got to run. Mark, what about you? Are you comfortable with small talk?
I don't mind it. There's sometimes, though, it's not very good. We were out to dinner. I was telling Kristen, and we're outside sitting on a patio, and this woman walked by, and we decided, hey, we'll talk to her and be real nice. And well, the lady sat there for 25 minutes telling us her life story.
Oh, jeez.
That's part of the thing, right?
How do we get out of this one?
Yeah. Well, now you know.
You needed to excuse yourself to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Cross your legs and say, I got to run. Right? Yeah. How funny. All right, guys. Well, that was great. That was really interesting and informative. Appreciate it. Good interview, Kristen. Our final segment here, I want to talk to you guys about spring break, something that happens every spring where young people, as we know, young kids, whether that be, I guess some, maybe the high school level, but most at the college level.
Oh, no, I think high school. Yeah,
absolutely. High school and college, right. They make their way to a warm weather location, typically a beach somewhere, some kind of environment like that, and they lose their minds. I know I'm generalizing here. Not everyone, but a lot of that goes on. We all know a thing or two about that.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Okay. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of changes that are happening with respect to spring break. First of all, there's issues of just general safety. I mean, Kristen, you're a parent. You have two young girls, and they're not far off from making that journey.
No, the major spring break trip.
Now, I have to ask before we get into how you feel about, for example, your kids and the issue of spring break safety and all the rest. I got to ask you guys, did you go on spring break?
As a senior in high school, I did, yes.
You did?
Unaccompanied.
Did you lose your mind? No, we don't know. Do we want to know?
Never. What happens on spring break stays in spring break. Oh.
Okay. All right. Mark, I know you were a good boy. You probably didn't go at all.
Oh, yeah. They closed those places that I visited.
They're no longer in existence.
No, but we went on spring break with my son when he was in high school for senior trip, and it was all-inclusive Mexico. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I feel like that's the way. I have nieces right now, and they are going to be going on their senior trip for spring break with their families, and that's kind of the thing to do now. Now, as for college students, that's totally
They're not
different.
Going with their mom and dad.
No.
Right. Is there anything that, we're just using it by way of example, but is there anything you can tell us about what happened with you at spring break? What went on? What was your spring break like, Kristen? We want to know. How about a little confession?
Yeah.
On air, in front of everyone listening
there'll be
right
no
now.
Confession.
I see.
However, I will say for a small town girl from the west side of the state, I cannot believe that I was allowed to go on spring break with a group of girls as a senior in high school.
You can't believe that your parents let you go.
No, because there's no way my girls are going on spring break in high school by themselves.
Because
no way.
You know too much.
Well, Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that have to do with you having certain experiences that you would not want your girls having?
Just what you observed.
Right, exactly.
What I observed.
Of course.
Right.
Of course. It's just like everyone going to Vegas and everyone comes back a winner, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How about you, Jeff?
Mark, I'm the one asking the question. Now, funny enough, Mr. Boring over here, I don't know, I was a late bloomer or something. I didn't go on a spring break. I didn't go on one of those kinds of things you see on, MTV? We used to see these things,
with
the kids. Uh-huh. No, it was none of that for me. But I can tell you this, as a parent now, now I've got a daughter who did go, but she went with both her senior year in high school, she went this year as a freshman in college. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, she has a very good friend, best friend, almost like, you know, part of their family, and their parents went, to your point.
Yeah.
So she did go.
Yeah.
But what made me feel comfortable in having her go was that she went with the other family and the parents went.
Absolutely.
And they were fine with it. I mean, they got to get out. They went out at night, you know, but they had to be home at a certain, or back at the
condo
hotel room,
or
whatever.
Hotel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you just see the news recently about Miami?
Well, so there you have it. I mean, not only are things changing as we think about them as parents, but also there are areas, geographic regions, cities that don't want spring break anymore.
Right. Then,
for example, Miami is what you're talking about. It brings in, if you will, for that week or two or month, whatever it is, that riffraff that makes it difficult on people willing to pay a lot more, the traveler who might be willing to pay a lot more, but doesn't want to go down into the mess of a spring break kind of circumstance.
Right.
So it's hurting their business more broadly by allowing all this influx of crazy kids looking to air it out in their spring break.
Right.
And so there are more and more areas and just not wanting to have a spring break.
Right. I don't blame them. I think in the article I read, they had to increase security, police patrol. They were doing DUI checks along the beach. They had a curfew that they were establishing now for spring break. That's just not the Miami the rest of us know. And quite frankly, as a family or as an adult now, if I were choosing to go to Miami, I just wouldn't pick during spring break time.
I'd go
a different time.
That shows you how it's hurting tourism.
You're right.
And generally speaking, people now in your situation in life where you have the means to spend, unlike you did when you were a spring breaker, you know, really trying to watch pennies, they much rather cater to the person who can spend.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's what's happening. Spring break certainly changing. All right. Well, there's always, by the way, for your girls, local beaches here in and around town.
I'm sure they'd be,
on the lakes, the Great Lakes. Oh, yes, boy.
Yeah.
That way you can keep an eye on them, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, honey, you can go to spring break, but you can only go within 30 miles of the house.
Lake St. Clair's right down the street. That's
right.
Where you're headed.
Oh, my God. But see that? I mean, and you really do feel like you'd want to be able to keep your eye on them.
For sure.
Especially girls. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Listen, good to be with you. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. And you can find us again next Saturday right here on Let's Go Michigan.